श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमान हरी हरि वो। Good evening to all of you. Pranam. And pranam to all of you also connected online. And today we are in our last meeting, at least during this particular visit to Sri Madhavan. We are sharing some Ishtagosti, one more series of one more meeting of questions and answers. So yesterday we did one emergency one, Sunday. And today one more that was already organized. So I don't know if there are any questions or topics you may like to hear about. Raj Sundari?
I'm wondering, singing the song about Mahaprabhu, and there's this like Adhikara Ula Sahiya, the joyful heart. I wonder whether Adhikara comes from that, like.
Okay, so here is one question. I repeat just in case it was not heard. Braja Sundar is asking about one song that we sing here in the morning in Madhavan. It's a description of the daily eightfold pastimes of Sriman Mahaprabhu, written by one Krishna Das, a disciple of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who wrote a Sanskrit Astakaliya Lila description of Nityanavadu, basically. So in this song there are different verses describing each of the pastimes, and in one of them the expression Adhika Ula Sahiya is there, which speaks about how Mahaprabhu delights Ulas. No? Ulas is a word like delightment, or what's the word? There's another word in English. Like
enchantment?
No.
Say ecstasy, but
no, there's one word he used many times specifically, but yeah, I have to keep upgrading my English for next visit. So, exultation?
Exaltation.
No, with you. You have the word in English? Exultation? I think that's the word he used. Oh yeah, some form, some kind of overflowing of inner content, if you will. So describing how Mahaprabhu is delighting in that. So the question of Raja Sundari basically is a grammatical one. So if the term adhika in this Bengali expression has to do with the word adhikar, which is a Sanskrit term, and so also mostly interested what's the meaning of the word adhikar, which is of course a very interesting term altogether. So the Sanskrit adhikar has to do with adhikar. So you can like divide the word in two. So kar means to do, implies action, like when you say madhukar, adhikar, and other kar. Kara is always indicative of action, of doing some stuff. And adhi in this case means like something like indicating like till this point, like up to, like till this point you can do. I mean, to know, basically adhikar sometimes translated as eligibility. So adhikar will mean like to know till which point you can do something. Till which point, you say? Yeah. On which level you are qualified to engage in something and on which level you are not. Which is the very implication of eligibility, basically, no? or aptitude. Aptitude, you say in English? So which are you eligible for? How much you can, whatever, lift certain weight, how much you can engage in certain activity, how much do you have capacity for that, and how much that will be healthy and sustainable. That's why Srimad Bhagavatam says, Sve sve dhikari janishta sa guna parikirtita. Basically, which means sve sve adhikari janishta, to know one's own adhikar, means saguna. Guna means virtue, among other things, quality, attribute, but virtue also. Parikirtita, again the word kirta. So parikirtita means to know one's adhikar, to know one, once where one is standing, basically, that's real virtue, or that's a real attribute. In the words of Thakur Bhaktivinoda, he will say, that's real beauty. Interesting. He said, to know your adhikar is real beauty. So basically that's the notion of adhikar, which is, not necessarily connected with the expression adhika in the Bengali. To begin with, there are two different languages, although, of course, one is rooted in the other, but not necessarily every single word that sounds similar may have like intrinsic connection. Not necessarily that. So again, we can make connections always and see that Adhika Ula Sahiya Mahaprabhu is experiencing deep exaltation and overflowing, and that's due to his adhikar. But just that my poetry, my implication. But basically adhikar has to do with one's eligibility. While in the song of Mahaprabhu, basically the description has to do with, if you want, like the byproduct of his adhikar. No, I mean, he doesn't have a top. He doesn't have like, okay, till here you can do it. I mean, in Mahaprabhu, I mean, in Krishna we even find that. In Krishna we find, as Guru Maharaj will say, certain limits. Basically, he would like to taste something. He would like to experience something. And he himself experienced certain constraints in his own lila. So, naturally, in an organically, the necessity for an extended version of Krishna lila manifests in the form of Gaur lila, in which Krishna can be all that he wants to be, basically, in which Krishna can attain his own potential, if you will, in the form of Sriman Mahaprabhu, which in one sense we could arguably establishes the most comprehensive facet of the Absolute, basically, in which Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, appears as Swayam Bhagavan Sri Chaitanya Dev, and he can make true his most cherished dreams, if you will. But in Krishna Lila, he finds some limits. So again, adhikar, we could say. Now, for tasting what he wants to taste, he needs to increase, if you want to put it poetically, his adhikar. So we could say Mahaprabhu is Krishna with upgraded adhikar or something like that, with the highest capacity for tasting certain realities that he is not able to do in Krishna Lila. I mean, if you want to put it like that, no? even you can apply ultimately to the Absolute. No? He has some awareness of his own limits. He's unlimited, of course. He perceives some quote-unquote limit, but in the context of him being unlimited, which means, oh, I have some limit. Okay, I will make the arrangement for that limit to disappear, and Satya Sankalpa is there. So it's no real limit, actually. It's just, we may call it in forms. Of course, Gaur Lila and Krishna Lila are eternal realities, but if you want to see how one Lila falls from the other, we could say, okay, Gaur Lila and Sriman Mahaprabhu is Krishna and Krishna Lila is perceiving some, if you want to put it this way, unactualized potential. So it's not a limit, it's just some potential that has not been actualized. So in the form of Sriman Mahaprabhu or Lila, you have the actualization of all that Krishna could be. And Gaur Lila is representing that full face of the Absolute. No? Like I like to call sometimes Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead, but Mahaprabhu is Supreme Personality of Krishna. Yeah? When you take God and kind of, how do you say, squeeze out all that God can be, you reach Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. God is his most intimate, informal, home-like moment. But if you want to go further and further, as when you are in India and you are walking on Parikrama, sorry for the analogy, but it applies on some level. You are on Parikrama in India and you are dying of thirst, that happens. And you are in some of these places where they have this, sugar cane juice that they offer with the machine. And there is a powerful motor, it's 10 times more than this. and they have the whole little place is like trembling like this. So you want some sugar cane? You say, yeah, I'm dying, please, one I mean, you will have like 10, but you have to begin with one. So they put the sugar cane on these two wheels, like are like, so in between goes the sugar cane and it's squeezing out. So one blast. But then they take the same sugar cane and again, second time, let's further squeezing. You can say like this, further squeezing. So in this way we can say the same. No? We have Bhagavan Narayan. And you say, oh, squeeze more sweetness from the sugar cane. You can draw more from that. Okay, second time. Zzz. So I am Bhagavan Sri Krishna. Oh, Madhurya. Prem Purush, Lila Purushota. I want to say, I want a third glass. Mm-hmm. Still I'm thirsty for more. Okay, third one. So they put again, and the further more juice is coming. It's not that there's no more juice. So then we find this ultimate version, if you will, hyper updated version of the absolute, upgraded, actualized, as you like to call him, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai. So he's the solution to Krishna's lack of adhikar, if we want to put it like that. He experienced his lack of adhikar, especially in connection to Shiradas, we know, as Guru Maharaj very beautifully, poetically depicts. No? He has this existential crisis by thinking, I'm Rasaraj, I'm supposed to be the king of taste, but there is a taste I lack, and she does not. So I have to go through that. So again, he's perceiving some adhikar, some lack of adhikar. She's tasting something I am not tasting. So the next question is, how can I acquire that adhikar? What do I have to do for, in which type of sadhana do I have to engage? He appears as a sadhaka. So he engages in sadhana to attain, as we always mention, sadhana means a discipline that points to transformation, basically, a transformative discipline. So Krishna himself is going through that in order to attain his goal, and we see how seriously he engages in sadhana as Mahaprabhu. It's real intense, real deep, as we say yesterday, no? Like 10% inspiration, 90% perspiration. Mm-hmm. That's the equation for success in sadhana. No? Don't expect just inspiration to come and come and come and how much you're perspiring. As Guru Maharaj would say, no? If you want to cry, first sweating, then crying. Mm-hmm. That's the watery sequence. Mm-hmm. First, water has to emanate from your pores in a certain way, and then first pores, then eyes. So Krishna himself is showing the example as Mahaprabhu, such a dedicated sadhaka, such an intense student and serious advocate of Sankirtan and so many other things. So, because again, it's Krishna upgrading his adhikar in order to taste the goal he wants to taste. So we ourselves have to take his example very seriously and of course try to establish our present adhikar, but only in order to upgrade to the ideal situation we are to be in, and how to plan our existence in such a way that we are, every single day is a day that we are getting closer to that ideal, basically. No? I mean, that's how our life should be planned. How every day that passes, my ideal is getting closer and closer. Mm-hmm. That requires certain strategy. No? I mean, you have to be a strategic about organizing your life and your goals and your efforts and your priorities. It's not that I chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Yeah, but as Guru Maharaj said, between chant Hare Krishna and be happy, there's one pair of brackets with so many things to consider. So that chanting takes you to be happy. You know, you have to put in place so many things in order and so on. So, anyhow, adhikar. Not only for ourselves, but since the question included Mahaprabhu, in one way or another, we try to connect this notion of adhikar with Mahaprabhu, Krishna himself, and Sri Gaurasundar being in one sense, the final expression of the Absolute. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Kishore, you have a question?
Yeah. It said that during the Gaudiya period, when Krishna's returning with the cows, the the dust of Raj Raj beautifies Krishna. And so I'm wondering if that dust is Inudipana for all the rasas, and if so, would it be Inudipana in like a slightly different way for Sakya Ras versus Madhurya Ras versus Vatsalya Ras?
Will be Anudipan in a different way for, you mentioned which camps, all or some of them?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, the reply in brief words will be yes and yes. So, I don't know if you want me to unfold more or that's enough. How much capacity do you have, like sugar cane machine to draw more? Another glass? Sugar cane? So, to begin with, of course, just in case, brief clarification of Kishore Krishna's question. Godhuli period is the moment in which Krishna returns with his friends, the cows, from his daily dharma, his religious duty as a cowherd, to take the cows to the forest and so on. I mean, that's his dharma, but in the context of doing his dharma, so many other things happen in between also, with his friends, eventually with the gopis, as we know. And the cows, of course. The dharma is there, but other dharmas are there. No? Dharmas, paradharmas, and so on. So when he is returning, this is called Godhuli. So as we mentioned, when Krishna and his friends are leaving for the forest on their daily exploits, basically, Vrindavan is dying of separation. That the village part of Vrindavan is dying. The forest part of Vrindavan is coming back to life. Basically, that's an interesting dynamic. Because Krishna is going to the forest. So the forest was dying in separation of Krishna and his friend from all the unending night and evening, previous night and evening that they were not there. They are dying in separation, they are getting back to life. But to compensate that, the village side of Vrindavan is dying in separation. So the dynamics of union and separation are always somehow imbalanced. I mean, like, compensating each other. It's not that everyone is always in separation, always in union. Of course, we could speak about some few exceptions to that, but in the nitya-lila eternal dynamic, there's always some union for some separation for others, and so on. Even if you say, well, but in Govardhan, everyone had union, not everyone, because so many species in other parts of far from Govardhan, I mean, trees and everything is a devotee of Krishna. But, so still some separation was there. What to speak when Krishna goes out of Vrindavan and so on the Boma Lila. So Godhuli means like the life returning to the Vrajavasis in the village when they see the dust raised by the cow hoops to begin with, that they are returning and they are raising this Brajaraj or the dust from Vrindavan, and which is especially performing some form of Abhishek to Krishna. It is mentioned that the dust from Braj wants to, I mean, it's transcendental conscious substance, not only in Vrindavan, but from Vaikuntha upwards. That is the case. Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is mentioned, Vaikunthira Prithivyadi Shakal Chinmay. So Vaikunthira Prithivyadi Shakal Chinmay means in Vaikuntha, Prithivi, the earth, the soil, Adi, and everything else, etc., Shakal Chinmay, they are constituted of transcendental conscious substance. So one speck of dust is the greatest devotee constituted of Swarup Shakti. Try to imagine. That's why Srila Siddhanta Maharaj will refer to those planes as planets of faith. Not only a place where people have faith, but planets made of that substance. So if the planet is made of that, you can imagine everything within it is constituted of another reality, basically. So, and you are just expected to enter there and walk doing sirsasana forever. You know what's your sasana? Like when you are standing on your head? Because you are to revere everything on your way. You are in a place where even a speck of that is made of something higher than your own constitution. you enter there as a Tathasta, Shakti, imbued with Sarup Shakti, but everything there is made of Krishna's internal energy, Sandini Shakti. And so, I mean, every speck of that is worthy of the highest regard. So you will be walking just like... So you can try to do Sirsasana, and all reality will be seen up, how do you say? Up, no, backwards? No, upside down, upside down. But the real question is really everything upside down, or now it's upside down? Because now I don't have my head on the ground. I'm not revering everything. But when I do that, oh, everything turns its opposite. So how this is working? Of course, literally, you won't be walking on your head in Goloka Vrindavan. But it's a way of putting this idea that when you do that, no, in one sense, literally here, you put your head on the ground, immediately you start to see, oh, everything seems upside down. But then you start to wonder, is actually upside down like this, or is upside down when I return to, quote-unquote, proper vision of reality? So the point is, the specks of dust there are made of transcendental conscious substance. It's not just dust. So it's one particular group of devotees which want to serve Krishna. I mean, everyone in Vrindavan is dying for serving Krishna. So the dust wants to be engaged properly in service and wants to bathe Krishna and to cover, to embrace him. So the arrangement is made that when they return in the afternoon with the cows and so on, this moment Goduli comes. No? The cows are walking in front and the raised dust is like a whole life signal for the Brajavasin separation in the village, because they see this dust and that implies cows are behind the dust, and behind the cows the implication is Krishna is behind that. The converging point is Krishna is coming. I mean, they see a dust, but for them it all concludes in Krishna is coming. So that's it's such a moment in the day of Vrindavan. I mean, it's like, again, back from the dead, something like this. They have these movies like The Living Dead or something. Back from the dead. You know, everyone is like dying. Just dust is making them alive. Imagine the convenience. Just dust. But they receive new living. I mean, that means Udipana, I'm sure, for sure. I mean, you are about to die and you are fully alive after seeing some dust. That has to be Udipana for some way or another. It has to be some type of stimulant. So that's it. So the scripture describes how Krishna is returning from the forest, and he's especially beautified by that dust. Generally, you don't think that someone, a dusty person, is more beautiful than without dust. If you come dusty, you will say, "Oh no, before coming, take a shower." If you have been, I don't know, digging the earth for 4 hours like Kishore and Zach this day, before lunch, you can go take a shower there in the central room. What's the name now? Okay, in the central room. Take some shower and we will have your prasad ready. Like, it's a little bit scary. You know? It's too dusty, you may be even like, what's that? No? Like a monster or something. But it doesn't work like that with Krishna. Again, everything in contact with Krishna is supremely attractive. And he is the all-attractive dust. There is all attractive. It's a pure devotee. So you combine all attractive with all attractive and you can only have all attractive plus 2.0. So this idea, no, the Shastra, many verses are there. Chala isiya prayam charayam pasum nalina sundaram natati param chilatinam kurai sidatitina manasinashmara kantaga. Many verses in the Gopi Gita or other places where the gopis, for example, one particular portal, they are looking at Krishna's dusty face and they are like specially attracted by that. I mean, of course, again, it's an udipana for their own particular vision. I mean, it's not that they feel, oh, Krishna is with dust, hopefully he will be clean soon and only then we will look at his face. If not, it's not so nice. Whatever comes in contact with Krishna somehow becomes more nice and Krishna becomes more nice. Like the nature of the higher realm. Everything is in constant evolution and development of beauty. It's not that something makes something less beautiful. You combine one thing with the other, and no matter what is the combination, it's just only increasing its beauty. Because that's how the spiritual world works, if you will. I mean, it works towards that common goal, you know, the increasement of beauty, the increasement of the experience of rasa. It can't go but in that direction. So whatever it happens, everything is increasing its beauty and everything is increasing its dedicating capacity to serve the beauty. So this is the case here. Krishna is returning. His whole body is covered by dust, not only by this particular dust, but by the whole day in the forest. So you can imagine, generally, if you're spending 8-9 hours in the forest, frolicking with your friends and running here and there and jumping and go over the hill and caves and river and grass and cows, you get dusty, to say the least. Yeah, you may bath in between, but again, if Krishna had just bathed before coming, now the dust of Raj is making him dusty for sure. No? Because it's the proper stage. It's Goduli time, so it's the moment of Duli. It's the moment of the dust to take its like main character in the stage. So everything becomes dustified, basically. And Krishna is not exception to that rule. So, and he becomes especially more beautiful with that. Again, everything that comes in contact with him becomes more beautiful, and he becomes more beautiful by extension. So yes, it's an udipana to begin with. Again, to begin with, it's making all the Brajavasis come back to life. And not only that, but it's an udipana, as the second question will be, that specifically stimulates each particular rasa. I mean, every devotee will see the same thing and they will be especially inspired for the particular reasons. For example, of course, Yashoda, the Vatsalya camp, if you will, if they see Krishna like a mess. I mean, he's never a mess, but in the motherly eyes, I mean, a little dust is like, oh my God, no, we have to do something about this. No? So all her Vatsalya is like, again, upgrading. No? It's overflowing her. She sees Krishna. I mean, she becomes attracted by Krishna. Again, she cannot but be attracted to Krishna at any situation, at any moment, with dust, without dust, etc. But at the same time, she becomes attracted to, not just to see Krishna, how beautiful you are, and how beautiful you are, and how beautiful you are. I mean, she's not in Santa Rasa. No. It's in Vatsalya Rasa, which implies also very practical considerations. Let's serve him. I'm his mother. I have to bathe him, to clean him, to cook for him, to massage him, to do. I mean, very practical ecstasy. It's not just fall in the zone and someone else has to do all the stuff. She's doing all the stuff, as Guru Maharaj mentioned. She's Brajeshwari. She's the queen of Braj. Nanda Maharaj is Brajeshwari. He's the king of Braj. So they could have so many people doing the household chores for Krishna, but they themselves, Nanda Maharaj is milking himself, this special cow selected for Krishna's milk to be invoked. And then Yashoda herself, with her own hands, the queen is churning the butter or to make it different preparations. And so, I mean, they themselves take the lead. It's not like we are the queen, the king, or whatever. We want to serve him. So Vatsalya takes that particular form. Yashoda sees Krishna dusty and she immediately thinks so many things that had to be done in connection to that. First, she becomes totally enchanted, of course. Again, she's coming back to life, especially she. I mean, if there's one person in the whole village that has been affected by Krishna's going to the forest, in one sense, it's Yashoda. Of course, the gopis in their own camp as well, but if you want to keep away the gopi for a moment, the Madhurya gopis, I mean, Yashoda is the main emotional like center that is affected by Krishna's not returning. As we mentioned, she's always going back to Nanda Maharaj saying, he didn't return yet. And Nanda Maharaj say, I mean, we are on time. He has to return like in 2 hours yet. Mm. But for her, it's like, it's too late. What happened? Something must have happened. And maybe a demon again, another, and this happened. And Nanda Maharaj trying to, again, on some external appreciation may seem like a dysfunctional lady, oversensitive or whatever, codependent, whatever. You can filter all the lila in a traumatized way, but it has nothing, it's a solution to all trauma. So Yashoda is especially waiting for that Goduli period. So when that happens, I mean, for her, it's like, again, Krishna's coming, she's in the dust, she keeps looking at the horizon, she sees the cows, looking at the horizon, her vatsalya is escalating more and more, finally seeing Krishna. And seeing Krishna in that particular disposition, returning with his friends and singing and dancing and celebrating existence and absorbed in their own play. And for Yashoda, it's like, as they say, not the apple of her eyes, are you saying? But again, that level of ecstatic perception at one point gives rise to the practical implications of, oh, I have to bathe him, I have to clean him, I have to, all that dust, I will. So in this way, you know, this dusty Goduli period will nourish Vatsalya, but also again, every camp, even if you want to speak of terms of Dasya, Dasya Bhavis are the servants who live at Nanda Maharaj's palace and who assist in all the things. So Yashoda will say, I will serve him, I will bathe him, but there are servants who are there also bringing the jars of water, bringing the towels, and bringing the perfumed oils, and bringing the different unguents for new tilak, and bringing all the ornaments to redress Krishna after. So the Dasya Rasa camp also becomes like activated by the Goduli. Again, all Vrindavan is coming back to life. So that's the point. All Vrindavan is udipanized in that particular way, you know, according to, again, their own lens. And again, for the gopis, the same. They are dying in separation. Whether they are in Purvarag, like in the Venugita period, or whether they are already meeting Krishna every midday, every midnight, still they're dying in separation. The more they meet Krishna, it's not that the less they feel separation. No? That's not how it works. No? The more they meet Krishna, the separation intensifies nonetheless when they are not meeting Krishna. And they are not meeting Krishna the whole day. So Godhuli is also a moment of rebirth for the for the gopis as well. So when they see Krishna and they see that particular dust, of course that's especially charming for them. That throws them into a whole, very much in line with what we saw in Venugita, a whole set of meditations, you know, regarding all the things he was doing in the forest, how they would like to be there with him. And of course, we have some lilas in which the gopis would like rather get to be dressed as Subal or something like that, and she has to sneak out for a moment there. So, but yeah, in the Gopi Gita especially, there are certain verses where the gopis describe Krishna's returning for the forest, and they kind of, it's a very intense meditation because every single verse is very detailed, and the whole Gita, and they get stuck, quote unquote, into so many of these things. They start to appreciate the dust in Krishna's face and his beauty because of that, and they get lost and found in that. You know? They find no depth, no bottom to that ocean of appreciation. And their own Madhurya Rasa, their own conjugal attraction becomes totally like actualized by that particular moment. That particular, of course, Krishna then is bathed and appears without dust, and that's still kindling their the Madhurya. It's not like, oh, now there's no dust, so it's not so attractive. I mean, again, it's escalating and escalating and escalating, and there's no limit to that. So yeah, we could mention how some examples on the list of how this Godhuli period act like Udipana to all the different camps of service in and of course Sakya Bhav is there already, I mean, being full of dust with Krishna all along the whole day, so you can imagine for them that's another type of Udipana. But yeah, for sure. What else? Any other question? The ones present here, the ones connected. I have one question sent here by Tarun Krishna Prabhu the other day. He sent me via email. He asked me if I could present the question in one of these Agostas, so I may do it. It's not about sex, it's sangha, it's about not some other topic. For those of you who are preparing for further controversy or whatever, it's not about that. So I'll read the question. It's somehow connected with some of the topics we have been sharing today. He says, it is supposed to be that the chanting of the Maha Mantra brings one into devotional samadhi. But we see, for example, that sometimes it brings one out of samadhi, as the example of Mahaprabhu, when he was experiencing sattvic bhav in Puri, and the devotees were chanting the holy name, so he came to external consciousness. We find a similar example in Srila Prabhupada and his disciples. Prabhupada entering into some deep samadhi, and he took him out of that by kirtan. So basically the question is how to understand these dynamics, no? Because generally we think, okay, by chanting Srinam, you reach samadhi, no? I mean, a particular type of samadhi we conceive in our lineage, no? Samadhi means basically absorption, total, absolute absorption. Not only concentration, if you want to speak in yogic terms, we know, of course, we have this pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. So pratyahara means retire your senses from the sense objects. Dharana means concentrate the mind in a particular direction. I mean, you are doing some conscious effort trying to concentrate, although the mind may go and you bring it back and so on. Then dhyana means meditation, which you get to have some considerable fixation in your object of meditation, and samadhi, which means uninterrupted flow of absorption, trance, sometimes described, no? Samadhi, or just complete samadhi. Dhi means meditation also. No? Different ways of conceiving that. So, of course, for us, that samadhi means prem, technically speaking, because when you love, as Kumaras will say, someone, I mean, you naturally think of that person, you cannot, but even if you try to forget the person, you cannot. So that's the samadhi we see in the gopis, as we always say. They want to forget Krishna for a moment. I mean, they don't want, but they seem to want. Just to make this point, and they try, they make an effort to not think about Krishna for one nanosecond, and that's not possible. That's their samadhi. So the point is, we are chanting, trying to achieve samadhi, but we find some instances in Shastra where chanting is used for cancelling samadhi, it seems at least. So it serves two purposes, or how does it work? I mean, I'm chanting to reach samadhi, and if I reach samadhi and I keep chanting, I will get out of samadhi and I will return where I am or something. How does it work? No. Chanting is taking me to samadhi, and chanting is taking me out of samadhi, so then I have to chant again to get inside of samadhi, but if I keep chanting, I will be thrown off of samadhi, so after samadhi, no more chanting. What to do? How to conceive? So, and again, the example given is Mahaprabhu, who on many occasions he was totally absorbed, internally absorbed, and he was brought back to reality, quote unquote, not quote unquote, reality. We'll explain why that was reality as well, by the chanting of his devotees. And Srila Prabhupada and other personalities as well, we have found similar examples. So, some things to say. Of course, one could say that to begin with, Mahaprabhu, he generally was described as going through different three main stages of consciousness, sometimes called like external consciousness, intermediate consciousness, and internal consciousness. So sometimes he was in external consciousness, which means he was aware of the environment and was a socially sustainable person you can interact with, and he can have a dialogue and so on. Intermediate consciousness means he was with one foot here, one foot there. No? It's like when you are getting drunk and you see you are losing track, you're goodbye. No? Mm-hmm. Still, you can remember my name and say some words and walk, but then when you are totally drunk, I mean, you cannot even speak, you are lying there, and who knows. So I'm giving the example of drunkenness because Mahaprabhu was drunk, in another sense of the term, of course. So intermediate stage was like he was kind of in between. No, he was getting lost, if you will, and found more and more. And internal consciousness, he was totally into inner experience with no contact, with no communication with the external world of sense, perception, and so on. Now that said, I mean, what does it mean that Mahaprabhu was in external consciousness? What does it mean? I mean, he was in Maya Shakti? No. He was perceiving things superficially? No. I mean, he was looking at Chaitak Parvat saying Giriraj and running. I mean, that was his external consciousness. He was looking at Jagannath, and Jagannath was appearing like Tribhanga Lalita. And that's external consciousness of Mahaprabhu. Our external consciousness, that's another story. But strictly speaking, these three ways of speaking about Mahaprabhu's consciousness, in one sense, are one same thing, but operating in different ways in connection to the environment. But it's not that in internal consciousness he was more what? Krishna conscious, and in the external consciousness he was more what? Distracted and thinking about nonsense. Or what? Mm-hmm. I mean, so in one sense we could say, I mean, he's Mahaprabhu. We already mentioned who is Mahaprabhu, what's his position. So you cannot say, he's external, he's now more internal, now he's more superficial, now he's more focused. I mean, there's in one sense it's one same thing, but it's expressing itself in different packagings, if you will. And sometimes they are called external, intermediate, internal. So that say, we can say, okay, Mahaprabhu is totally absorbing in some particular lila, and some of his devotees are chanting and he returns. But it's not that he, again, became more superficial now. He's transported from one lila to another, we could say, arguably. It's not that, oh, now the lila is over. He still is always in lila. I mean, if you want to call even Krishna lila, Gaur lila, that's another way of putting. He's in some particular identity, like in one of those cases with Mahaprabhu is having a vision of arguably himself as a Manjari. This is one of the two rare instances in Chaitanya Charitamrita in which Mahaprabhu is not envisioning himself as Radha in Radha Bhav, nor as Krishna in Krishna Bhav, but in Manjari Bhav. Arguably, at least most of the acharyas present that when he's assisting Radha and Krishna in the reunion and picking some flowers, the Jugal, the divine couple, asked him, her, go bring some flowers. So he was having all this vision and he was suddenly interrupted by the noise of Swarup Damodar. In other words, the kirtan of Swarup Damodar. How much noisy can that be? No? And he was transported from Manjari Bhav in Krishna Lila to Gaur Lila, which again, I mean, Gaur Lila is more superficial than Krishna Lila. I wouldn't say that. We were already mentioning the depth and glory of Gaur Lila, so I mean, till which point you can say, oh, the name took him out of the Lila, yeah, out of the Lila and to another Lila, which is the same Lila, by the way, but just in another way. And arguably, you could say Gaur Lila is higher in one sense. You know? No, we don't want to enter into the best, worst, better dichotomy. Also, one could say, if we want to think in terms of Nam Guna Rupa Lila, so one could say, okay, Mahaprabhu is chanting Nam consciously, if you will, on the external level of consciousness, and that transported him to the other layers, which are non-different from Nam. And the fact that Nam takes to Rupa form, Guna qualities, and Lila participation in divine play, they are not four different things. Basically, considering from the absolute perspective, it's one taking different forms as the other. So Mahaprabhu was immersed in Lila, like the question was presented, and taken back to, again, another Lila by Nam, which is in one sense non-different from Lila. Of course, the sequence is made there. Like, if you chant Nam, Sri Nam, properly, that will take you to the Lila ultimately. That's also an important point that Mahaprabhu is making. He was chanting, but eventually he was immersed in Lila. That's supposed to happen eventually to us. And of course, in this case, again, Mahaprabhu is hearing Harikirtan from Swarup Damodar. and he's getting out of samadhi into a new samadhi, but he's hearing that as noise, saying, what's that noise? Again, I mean, if there is a kirtan that is not noise, that's Swarup Damodar's kirtan. I mean, how can you? But you have to understand the idea behind the words, like implying he was experiencing such a thing that he considered that as noise. But again, technically speaking, I mean, what's the difference between Mahaprabhu immersing Leela and Swarup Damodar singing kirtan? I mean, you won't say one thing is higher, the other is lower. I mean, Swarup Damodar singing kirtan, Lalita Sakhi Devi personified singing kirtan in a particular way, with a particular moment and necessity, you know, in that particular emotional intensity. But Mahaprabhu heard that the word is kolahala, which means like tumult, like what's that? Of course, he's depicting his subjective experience. He was deeply immersed in something, and he was suddenly like taken out of, and you feel like, what's going on? It's like if you are sleeping, again, an example, and someone like wakes you up immediately. It's like, what's going on? Or even if Morley appears and plays the flute, more subtly. But maybe you wake up immediately also like, what's going on? What's that noise? Oh, no, Morley says, I do not play that bad. Be more generous, it's my flute. No. So Srila Maharaj will make that point. No? That's a point made by Srila Maharaj. Mahaprabhu was so immersed that he considered sort of Damodar's kirtan noise. No? Like a lower thing that what he was experiencing. But again, strictly speaking, that's not a fact. It was just to make a point. Something that could be said in this connection is that also that in one sense that can be also applied to this idea of external consciousness, that Mahaprabhu was beyond hearing, no? Like when you are in deep, whatever, internal situation, your external senses become like inactive. So he was beyond hearing, but suddenly he started hearing something. So that brought him, again, out of the trance of that internal kirtan. He was in some kirtan internally. Because again, kirtan is not only give me the mridanga and say Hare Krishna. No. If you understand what kirtan means, I mean, Mahaprabhu was totally immersed in a particular expression of kirtan in Krishna Leela, and another expression of kirtan came through his senses and brought him to a particular reality. But again, it brought him from one kirtan to another kirtan, or from one lila to another lila. Because again, nam, guna, rupa, lila, they are non-different. So you are just being transported from one substance of the same nature to another, taking different forms. So in one sense, yeah, the chanting is the way to samadhi, but also we can see that it can, how do you say it like in English, like one can drift in or out through kirtan as well. But again, at that point you are, if you reach samadhi, that drifting in or out is just in terms of samadhi also. I mean, it's not that you lose the samadhi, you lose the nam, you lose the kirtan, you lose the lila, but you are just switching into different situations of that same quality. Everything will be samadhi-like. Even though it takes some form, of Mahaprabhu is complaining, oh, that noise or whatever. That's part of this of the samadhi. Even though he's complaining about the noise, that's all in the context of samadhi. So something similar also happened with Prabhupada many times. The devotees have mentioned that, and there are many accounts, you see, of that. Like he's who will be singing or mostly during kirtan, but also in some other moments, and he will really fall into trance and again lost and found, gone. But mostly during kirtan or lectures, and devotees chanting on Prabhupada like very softly, because somehow they heard, oh, with Mahaprabhu this happened, so maybe we have to, let's try the same formula. So they start to like chance. But again, you and Prabhupada will return, but to which point he returned, to which point he was brought out, or he's just extending that experience into a particular layer that is maybe for us more accessible, but it doesn't mean that the person diminished his, her trance or something, you know? So again, some ways of thinking about that, not just like in or out or black and white or something like that, but at that level, again, samadhi, if you are in samadhi, means you have a realization of the non-difference between nam and Krishna, for example, between what speak nam, guna, rupa, lila. So you are moving into that advaita jnana. You are an inhabitant, officially speaking, of non-dual reality. So you have an insight that reality is non-dual. Still, we don't have that insight, but that's why we are here, if you will. But at that level, you have that insight. Reality, tattva, reality, as the Bhagavatam say, badanti tattva vidas tattvam jnana advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. So tattva, which means reality in this case, is advaita jnana, which means non-dual consciousness. Jnana in this case means like consciousness. So when you are in samadhi, I mean, you are there. You have full reach to that non-dualism, and of course all the diversity in that, spiritual diversity in that context. So again, those the movements that will be there, whether it take the form of external consciousness, intermediate, internal, noise, I mean, all that will be different ways of saying samadhi, 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 samadhi. So you are being just transported into different shapes of samadhi or different ways of speaking about the same thing, nam, lila, and so on. I hope that helps. Tarun Krishna is not connected now, but I'm sure he will hear later. So some thoughts about that. Let me know later your thoughts on that. So we're almost ready to finish, but I don't know if there's any other last question you may like to present today, whether online or how do you call
it?
Inline, live. Okay. So it seems that was the last thing. So we will begin with that last note, samadhi, and trying to embrace Srinam in such a way that probably we are being taken to that, and that's an interesting point, because our next, at least in my personal case, if Krishna considers it proper, next time we will be coming here to Madhavan, we will be trying to embrace Srinam in such a way that it takes us to samadhi, because we are organizing some maybe japa retreat, hopefully, and all of you will be invited also to join. That will be for the Janmastami, Balade Purnim Janmastami times. We will be organizing some festival here. Main theme will be japa retreat, trying to to actualize our relationship, our bond with Srinam, and also sharing some follow-up lectures as getting closer and closer to the advent of Sri Krishna during August or something. So hope to see you there somehow or other. And thank you to all the Madhavan Basis, the residents here of the Dham, Dorji Gopal, Srila Gurudev, all the Vaishnava for allowing me to visit here again, giving me the opportunity of service and trying to please you, to inspire you somehow. That's my greatest fortune and commitment. So hope I may be able to come again and in my heart of hearts continue developing a healthy relationship of appreciation and gratitude and humility and joint efforts to bring further pleasure to our guardians. So thanks so much for giving me one more chance, one more opportunity. Not lose hope. I'm a lost case, but hope can make mercy can make possible the impossible. So that's our real hope at the end of the day. So Thank you so much and see you very soon. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Primanand ki jai.